On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Sweet Tuesday morning came on your smile.
Tuesday. Girl in the cut, she Tuesday.
Sun comes up, it's Tuesday morning.
Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. Yes, I am. Don't argue with me. I know who I am. I think I know that. Who are you, by the way? You faceless, nameless person, you? Thank you for coming. Welcome to the program. Make yourself comfortable. Have a seat. This won't take long. It won't be that painful. I'm going to administer painkillers to you so you can get through this program. Well, if you're not familiar with the show, neither am I, so I think we have something in common now. It's a comedy show, so I don't talk too much about serious topics, although every once in a while I do. And we have some interesting guests that join us during the program sometimes. Otherwise, I just talk incessantly, and it gets annoying. How are you? How you feeling, huh? How you doing with the big social experiment? Are you doing all right? If you live with somebody, are you going crazy? Have you lost all your hair from pulling it out? Is your hair turning gray because you haven't been to the hairdresser, the salon place? I don't know what you call these people. Barbers? I don't know. Have you not had your hair dyed? Oh, my God. What about your collagen treatments? Oh, my God. Got to get the collagen treatments in your forehead so you don't look like you're constantly worried with lines all across your forehead. Come on. Let's pull it together. President Trump, and I use that term so loosely it's not funny. President he's starting to wear a face mask now all of a sudden. I guess his poll numbers aren't doing well. And they said, you better put a face mask on, at least look like you're concerned about it. So he started doing that. But I'm telling you something, there's something about it bothers me greatly. Now he's doing these photo ops with a face mask on to show how much he so truly cares all of a sudden. My God. My God. So he's got a face mask, and here's the funny part, and I'm sorry, I'm not laughing out loud, I just find it annoying. In the bottom corner of his face mask is the presidential seal. Now, I got to tell you something, that just looks so moronically stupid. You just look like a dorky idiot, not with the face mask, but with the presidential seal on it. It's just, I know you're the president, I've read about it, I've heard about it, not thrilled, but I get it, you're the president. You don't need to have a presidential seal on your face. Are you afraid somebody else is going to wear your mask? Oh, no, that's not your mask. Look, it's got the presidential seal, that's my mask. Sorry, almost put that on by mistake. Thank God the presidential seal is on it. Come on, we don't walk around wearing our names or our business cards on our face masks, do we? I mean, face masks, that's hard to say. He looks so stupid with the presidential seal. I get it on the airplane, all right? I get it on the airplane, that sounds wrong. I get the idea on an airplane where you have the presidential jet airplane thing, and you put the seal of the President of the United States on the side of the plane. That's so you know, oh, look, there's a plane. Oh, it's the President's plane. All right, I get that. Or on the limousine, you have the presidential seal on the door. All right, as stupid as that looks, I get it. You have to be able to know that limousine. Look, it's a black limousine. Oh, it's the president. The president must be in it. All right, I get that. I get that stuff. On the podium, I don't think it's necessary. We all know who he is by now, but it's on the podium. It's my podium. This is the official seal of the president. I'm standing behind a podium. All right, fine. I can let that one go. Starting to wear it on your clothes? No, no. That's where we start to get a little stupid looking. Double that stupid looking and put it on your face mask, and that's absolutely absurd. Anyway, he's wearing a face mask now, and I guess he's saying, I don't really care about people. It's just I want to make it look like I do so I can, you know, get some votes. That's anything he does is so he can get some votes, except eating hamburgers from Wendy's and McDonald's. That he does because he actually likes them. I guess a hamburger at McDonald's never argued with him or done him wrong. So, you know, although they do me wrong. I haven't had a fast food hamburger now in about 6 months. Because I value my life both to avoid the virus and to avoid the McDonald's hamburgers, man. I mean, they're very, very tasty. They're very alluring. But half an hour later, I mean, there better be a toilet nearby or something that I can writhe in pain near. Do you know what today is? Yeah, I know it's Tuesday. I get it. That was part of the opening. Today's National Junk Food Day. Has it come to that? Are we naming these official days after ridiculous things? I understand National Hepatitis Day, National Cancer Awareness Day. I'm aware of it. I'm aware that people have cancer and it's not good to get it. And I'm aware. I don't think you need to have a special day for it. What am I supposed to do? Honor? I don't even get it. Anyway, but today is National Junk Food Day, and I guess what it means is you're supposed to go out and eat junk food. That's going to increase the death toll. My God. I can't. There must be a line around the block at McDonald's and Wendy's and that other thing where you wear the crown. Oh, my God. I remember a few years ago. That's the end of the sentence. I remember a few years ago. I went into a Burger King, and I don't remember why. I would have no reason to do something. I actually prefer Burger King to McDonald's because it's got that little bit of a barbecue taste, you know, the flame broiled. It's close to a barbecue hamburger, but not. So I think I went in there for a Whopper, and which is, by the way, how you describe your arteries after you eat one of these things. Boy, yeah, my artery busted. It was a Whopper. It was a Whopper that killed you? No, it was a Whopper that made my artery. It was a hamburger. So I went into the Burger King, and I see this grown man. I think it was his birthday. I'm not sure. Celebrating your birthday, Burger King? Get some kind of a life, please. He's sitting there. He's got that paper crown on his head. What are you doing? What is there anything you could wear that would make you look stupider? Yes, a face mask with a presidential seal on it. That would come close. Anyway, welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. I could prove it to you. I could show you my driver's license, but no one's seeing that picture. Oh, my God, no matter what I do, that my driver's license picture looks like I should be convicted of something. I mean, God, it's just, there's nothing I can do. I don't know if it's the cameras and the motor vehicle department or because they just hate customers so much they make sure everybody looks horrible. If you have a driver's license picture that you think looks good, you are one in 56 million people. Their cameras are trained to take horrible photos. They don't want you looking good. No. No, they don't. Oh, my God. It's awful. It's all, and we change our appearance all the time, don't we? You know, men can grow a beard or a mustache or their hair longer or shorter. Or women can dye their hair a whole nother color or look totally different. Women are like disguise experts. I don't really know what women look like anymore. I have behind all the makeup and the hair changing color, and it's frizzy, it's curly, it's straight. I bangs, no bangs, some bangs. I don't even know what these people look like anymore. They change. They're like chameleons. Well, used to be. Anyway, so how are you, by the way? How are you feeling? How are you doing? How are you psychologically? Are you okay? I feel somehow in the back of my head, this pain, I feel in the back of my head that as bad as most of the country is at this point, as far as the rising death tolls and hospitalizations, you know, I made the point yesterday. I'm going to do this really quick because it's supposed to be a comedy show, and I apologize. It's people are dying from this a lot, and that's freaking scary. No kidding. But just to get the virus and then be hospitalized is like even scarier. You don't want to be in a hospital right now for that, with tubes shoved down your. You know, when you come out of it, if you do, your organs are damaged because they've been attacked by this virus for an extended period of time. Things have been shoved down your throat. You're never the same again. In many cases, they don't talk about that. Just being hospitalized is horrible in itself. And you can have these problems from that hospitalization probably for the rest of your life, some are finding. So this is not a funny shit thing. This is like, wear that freaking mask, will you please? I don't really care at this point if you got a presidential seal on it or not. Wearing the mask worked before. Not wearing it is not working now. Okay, that's all I have to say about that. I don't want to be over dramatic. I think I have a guest coming up a little bit later in the show. I had a very frustrating day yesterday. Oh, Ron, tell me about it. Well, thanks for asking. My God, sounds like you care, but, you know, whatever. I had a very frustrating day. Everything I touched didn't work. Everything I touched did not work. I was scared to go to the bathroom, if you know what I mean. Because everything I touched didn't work. My printer didn't work for some reason. My printer just said, "You're having a sucky day, Ron." I don't think I'll work either. And it's, I was hitting print and nothing was happening, and I had to do a whole investigation, and all of a sudden, you know, life just changed. Technology is wonderful, but when it doesn't work, it's so frustrating and so awful to how much we depend on this stuff. Oh my God. A few days ago, my cell phone wasn't working. I was tapping on the screen and the damn thing wasn't responding to me. And all of a sudden, my world changed. All of a sudden, my world changed. Everything sucked. Oh, my God. They don't have a cell phone suicide hotline if your cell phone isn't working, because you can't call the hotline now. It was very scary. I've talked about this before. Did you ever get in your car and drive to the store or go someplace, as if there's someplace to go, and you realize, oh my God, I forgot my cell phone. You can't keep going. You got to turn around. I'm going to be late. I'm going to miss my appointment, but I need that cell phone. It's like my blood. I need to have it. I need it. It's, and then you realize, oh my God, I am hooked. I am a product of this society of stupidity. Or your computer doesn't, you know, work or something, and it, all of a sudden you get a panic. Oh my God, all the information on my computer and I can't get it out. Oh, mama, oh no, oh no, 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 no. Oh no, please, 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 please work. Oh, please, 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 please. It's amazing how we go crazy. I talk about this all the time. When I was growing up, a pencil and a pad of paper, oh my God, that worked all the time. The worst that could happen was the pencil point would break and I'd have to put it in the pencil sharpener. I'm sorry, you kids don't even know what a pencil sharpener is. You don't even know what a pencil is. People were so into pencils when I was growing up. Serious people used to take a pencil and put it, tuck it behind their ear and walk around with a pencil behind their ear. And we all thought these were the smart people. That was a sign of intelligence. Look at that guy over there. He's got a pencil behind his ear. He must be smart. He must be an accountant or an engineer or something. No, he just decided the way to get babes was to put a pencil behind his ear. That's all. That's all that is. That's all. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But we use pencils and paper all the time for everything, you know. That's very funny, Ron. Let me write that down. You got a pencil? We don't have anything to write things down with anymore. We don't even write checks anymore. We just scan things. Everything's scanned. I'm scanned at the airport. I'm scared. I'm scanned. Scanned for my discounts in the stores. I'm being scanned and everywhere. Scammed and scanned sound very, very similar. If not for an extra loop on that double letter, we'd have the same word. But if you just stop and think about how much you're a prisoner to technology, you thought technology would free you up and that everything would be easier. It's harder. Every time we get more technology, we need more security. We got to spend zillions of dollars on security to protect the crap that we invented that are supposed to make life so much easier and now so much more expensive. So much more. Everything can be hacked. They can steal your identity. They can steal your furniture. They can steal your credit card number. They can steal your... they can take everything from you. Ah, technology. Ah, what a comfort. No, you opened up the doors to being like privately raped of your information. That's what you did. Easier sometimes, tremendously more difficult always. I got to tell you something, man. I think I lived life very well without having my cell phone turn the lights on for me. I really don't find that to be a problem. When I enter a room, the light switch is usually right there. I just flick the little thing up and the lights come on. I don't know why I need to go to my cell phone to turn the lights on. It seems like an extra number of steps to me, as opposed to just turning to the side and flicking the switch on the wall. Seriously, what the hell did we do to ourselves? And we think it's fantastic, don't we? I'll tell you, the only invention that I thought was really wonderful, and I talked about it last week, was the remote control. That was worth it. That was good. Not having to get up and change the channel on the TV. I don't even know where the channel changer is on my TV. I don't think I can change channels on my TV without the remote, as a matter of fact. But that's okay. That was worthwhile. No one's stealing my identity or hacking me for me to change a channel with a little handheld box sitting in a chair. That's a fine invention. Everything else sucks. Everything else sucks. The printer problem that I had, there was a paper jam. I put another sheet of paper in, it jammed again. I opened that sucker up. I did an autopsy on the thing, and it still wouldn't work. Finally, through some mystery of technical crappily, it started working, and I don't know why it started working. It just does. I recently had to change the ink in my printer, and I realized when I go to the store and I buy ink, the ink costs as much as the printer did originally. My printer was like $90. My ink supply between the color and the black is $90. Wait a minute. That makes no sense. That makes no sense whatsoever. You mean to tell me a piece of equipment that prints, scans, makes copies, faxes, does all the smart stuff, collates, does all this funky printer stuff, that's the same cost as a little vial of ink? Something's wrong somewhere. And I know where it is. It's supply and demand. And the supply is that there's plenty of stupid people, and the demand is they want stuff, and that's how that works. There's your economics lesson. If you have a large number of stupid people, and then you have a product, you're pretty well set off. You're good. You're good. If you market them properly, you can sell crap to a dog. And by the way, can we just stop that stuff? Why do dogs have to turn around and smell their own crap? And sometimes actually eat it. Not often, but they do love to smell it. It makes me think twice about this relationship that I have with dogs. I love and caress something that likes to smell its own crap and every once in a while take a lick or two. If I met a person, if I was dating a person or living with a person who every once in a while after taking a dump in the toilet likes to turn around and just lick it and smell it, they would not be in my life anymore. And it would be a lasting impression that would psychologically screw me up for the rest of my life. And yet, an attractive dog, it's okay. It's lick away, dog. Lick away at your own excrement. Because I love you still. Because that's still adorable. I don't know how that works. I don't know how we accept that. I just don't. Aww. Yeah, that's not adorable. But it is, because it's a dog. It's a puppy. Look, I'm going to hold one up now. Aww. I know. Our guest is going to join us momentarily. I know that thrills you no end. How you doing, by the way? I want to make sure you're okay. I don't want to go through the whole show with not paying any attention to you. I want to make sure that you're doing well. You doing okay? Fine. All right. We'll be right back. Bye.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
Russell Heath joins us now. He's an author. He was a lobbyist in the Alaska State Legislature, and he has penned a book that is, indeed a thriller, although being a lobbyist for the environment is a thriller in itself, I would assume. How you doing there, Russell?
Doing quite well this morning. Thanks.
As anybody knows, when they've been a lobbyist or an advocate for something environmental, it gets pretty scary because you find that the companies that want to oppose the environmental idea are very cutthroat and will stop at nothing in order to get their point across so that they can make money. It's a very scary thing what they have in their arsenal, and I guess you came up against that quite a bit.
Well, I did, but I want to say, too, that, you know, the greenies can be pretty cutthroat themselves.
Really?
I had my moments there on the state legislature.
Okay, all right. Well, how are they cutthroat?
Well, One of the things I did, for instance, is that there was a horrific timber bill that was going through the legislature when I was there.
Uh-huh.
It would have given 50-year contracts to private companies to cut hundreds of square miles of state forest,
right.
And we got the entire state whipped up against this bill, or a good substantial part of it, but it was still going through because it was a Republican bill, and the Republicans controlled the state government there.
Uh-huh.
And so what I learned towards the very end of the session was that the senator whose bill this was, who was sponsoring this bill, was also co-chair of finance, and nobody's pork bills were going through finance because he was spending too much time on his timber bill.
Uh-huh.
So what I did is I figured, well, I needed to help out the other Republicans who wanted their pork. So I blocked up his office. I set up a fax machine at a friend's house, and we just took over his fax machine and just faxed anti-bill comments into his office for a week.
Uh-huh.
I got five stay-at-home moms just to dial in every minute so that his phone lines were all tied up, and we spammed his email so that he couldn't get any email. The server crashed.
Nice.
So the entire office shut down, and his caucus went ballistic, so he had to pull his bill so he'd get everybody's pork through the finance committee before the end of the session.
Yeah, but weren't you just fighting fire with fire?
Well, whatever. I just want to say that we're not without our means.
I understand. Well, yeah, I know. I just think that what you were doing had a purpose behind it. What they were doing had an evil purpose behind it. But that's just my opinion. How long did you do this for?
So I was the lobbyist for 2 years.
2 years. Okay. Are you still connected to government?
No, not in that way.
Okay.
That was a while ago.
Okay.
I've write novels about it.
I understand. Yeah, so what point did you decide that you were going to take this and turn it into, I guess, fiction with a base, I guess you would call it?
Well, so if you've ever been to Alaska,
yeah.
If anybody's ever been to Southeast Alaska, mm-hmm. It's just unbelievably beautiful. It's breathtaking in its beauty. In the Southeast Alaska, the largest remaining temperate rainforest in the planet, and it was being cut with abandon, criminal abandon.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to have a fantasy, why don't I just sneak into some of those logging camps and take out their machinery? And no one would catch me. And it wouldn't do any good, of course, because the onslaught is relentless. But it would be really nicely cathartic.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, wait a minute. What happens if somebody else were accused of my crime? What would I do then? And it was that question that sparked the novel. Because the novel starts out with a man sabotaging a logging camp.
Yeah.
And, of course, his ex-lover gets charged with a crime. And so that kicks the whole thing off.
That's cool. I mean, it sounds completely normal to me, but okay.
There is almost no ecotage in Alaska.
Yeah.
There's certainly a lot of logging timber theft.
Right.
A lot of trees are stolen that don't belong to people.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of ecotage.
That's fun. You do this full time now?
No. Well, I'm marketing a book full time. It takes as much time to market a bloody book as it does to write it.
Yes.
And
Russell, where are you from? You're not from Alaska, though, originally, are you?
No, I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia. I loathed them from the earliest age. Wanted to go to Alaska since I was 13 or 14. Dropped out of school and hitchhiked up there in 1974.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I counted Alaska home until 2010 when I left to move to New York City because I wanted a little more frenzy in my life.
Yeah, well, you got it now. Well, yeah. So all right, now I understand why you're a writer. You can't live in New York and not feel that type of excitement. It stimulates you somehow.
Extraordinary city.
It is extraordinary. I'm also from New York, and it never leaves you. Once you live there, it never leaves you. Of course, you can't. Mm. You can't afford it, but still, it's besides the point. This is fascinating. Are you working on another book? I know you're promoting this right now, but most authors have something else brewing in their minds at all times.
So I have my first novel, Broken Angels.
Yep.
Was also well reviewed and finalist for a few competitions, and I have someone right now who's trying to turn it into, you know, an extended TV show for Netflix or whomever.
There you go.
And I have a sequel to that novel in my head, but whether I put it down to paper or not, I don't know.
I see.
It depends whether it becomes a TV series.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some years ago, I sailed around the world in a small 25-foot sailboat.
Really?
So my next writing project will be writing about that trip.
Wow. Or perhaps espionage on the trip. No.
I guess so. There's very little espionage.
I know.
Every once in a while you have to buy off the customs officials, but otherwise that's espionage.
There's a series right there. Okay. Fascinating stuff. Are you glad you were a lobbyist, or do you look over your shoulder and say, that was something that was ugly, I don't know?
No, that was an extraordinary experience. Mm-hmm. The organization I worked for only allowed you to be a lobbyist for 2 years, and then they brought somebody new in because they were trying to train people in the legislative procedure.
Yeah.
But it was an extraordinary experience. I learned a lot, and I learned a lot about politics, you know, how you make things happen, and how you have to compromise and you know, accommodate a number of different interests and values you know, points of view. I'm really quite defensive of politicians. It's a difficult job.
Uh-huh.
No one likes you, but it has to be done.
Yeah.
Politics is part of being a social animal.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, the only community, the only human community where there's no politics is a graveyard.
Well, it's true now. There's no question about that.
But my larger point is that being good at doing politics is a service to people.
Yeah. It is, but it's also an education as to how manipulative the human race can be to get their point across at any cost, and that's a little scary in my mind as well. I mean, we always look for, you know, that shaking hands, you know, across the aisle kind of thing, which I guess does happen, but it's still, but the game still goes on.
Well, you know, I'm a life coach, and that's actually how I make my business now. And I'll tell you that if you want to get into manipulation, looking at marriages.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Now you just gave me the entire story that I need. If you're a life coach, it means you put up with crap and you try to make people understand, look, nothing's perfect. It's all crap. Work it out. Yeah, I get it. Okay. Right. Fine. See, I would love to get a book from you about being a life coach with some espionage involved or some type of a thriller on a life coach thing. Because that's like, everybody should have a life coach. Everybody needs one, especially these days with the social experiment going on. And I can imagine there must be some interesting stories there that can be expounded upon fictionally.
Well, that would certainly take some creative doing. I hadn't considered that. I'll give it some thought.
Okay, thanks. I'll buy the first book. Okay, so how do people get in touch with you and get a hold of the book?
Okay, so I have a website, RussellHeathAuthor.com. Or if you Google Russell Heath Coach or Russell Heath Author, I pop right up.
Okay.
The book's name is Rinn's Crossing. Rinn is R-I-N-N apostrophe S. He's the main character, Rinn's Crossing. You Google that and we'll pop right up. So it's easy enough to get a hold of me.
Great. And you can also follow him. I guess you can be followed. I mean, not in a stalking manner, certainly.
I don't know. Sometimes it's an honor to be stalked. You know, you're sitting there writing all alone in your garret wondering if anybody's ever going to read what you want.
I'm stalkable. I mean something to somebody. Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Hey, Russell, pleasure speaking to you. Russell Heath. Google him, H-E-A-T-H, and you'll find him. Thank you so much. Good talking to you.
Hey, thank you, Ron. Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good day.
You too. You have been wonderful. I don't know how you do it. I couldn't do this. I could not listen to me. And believe me, people that know me, when I talk, they don't listen to me. I can talk like for half an hour and they'll turn around and go, I'm sorry, Ron, did you just say something? I've been talking for half an hour. You haven't heard a word I said? No, I haven't. I haven't. I'm sorry. Could you just repeat what you said? No, I can't. I'm sorry. I missed that. But what do you mean you missed? I've been talking to you and you didn't hear me? And you tell me you can multitask? Well, only when there's a task that's worth listening to. Oh, my God. I'm out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. This is when you stop. When you can't talk anymore, that's when you stop. Have yourselves a wonderful day. Wear a mask in public, damn it. It'll make it all better soon. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.